Oh, I've got a home, I'm just rambling all around. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make me hard wherever I may go. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road. A hot and dusty road.
I'm Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and that's about the prettiest version of Woody Guthrie's Ain't Got No Home that I'd ever heard before, sung by a woman from Arkansas, I believe, named Gina Galena, playing the banjo. As Woody himself might put it, it's a funny world we're living in. Scientists are predicting massive droughts, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Dust Bowl, and the rich men are still taking people's homes and driving them from their doors. It happened to me just the year before last. And if you ever thought to take the chance and raise your voice and say, "No, this is my home," you might be told you have the wrong idea about how this world works. Or you may be shouted down or just ignored. And for those who are not able to land on their feet like I was fortunate enough to, the police are still making it hard. So today's Well-Read Red by Fran Michel hits mighty close to home. She considers why housing justice hasn't been achieved under capitalism, what housing justice is when reasonably and humanely considered, and last but not least, what kind of direct collective action will actually get us the goods.
Good morning. The Well-Read Red has some readings on housing. First, from a 1946 New International essay by Miriam Gould on Profits and the Housing Crisis, Conflicting Interests of Banks, Industry, and Real Estate. Quote, "Way back in 1872, Friedrich Engels made three generalizations about housing under capitalism that remain the key to analysis of the problem today. First, he said, all the sermons liberals and reformists preach to capital about the profitability of low-cost housing are a waste of time. Capital has ignored the mass housing field because greater profits are to be made elsewhere, and profits, not human need, are the sole criteria of whether capitalism produces. Second, the problem of housing is subordinate to the basic question of income distribution. Until the unjust and evil system we have today is ended, planned, healthful living in cooperative, functional, truly human communities is impossible. Third, the general problem of housing can never be solved without resolving the antithesis between town and country. Translated into simple terms, mass housing is impossible without city planning and socialist regional and national economic planning." End quote. Next, from a 2014 Jacobin essay by Samuel Stein on New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's doomed housing plan. De Blasio, Stein notes, is an advocate of inclusionary zoning, a policy prohibited in Oregon, along with rent control, rent stabilization, and real estate transfer tax, all policies that have been used elsewhere to provide for more affordable housing. Inclusionary zoning, as Stein explains, is an extremely popular program among housing experts and advocates and is becoming something like the country's consensus housing policy. Hundreds of U.S. municipalities have adopted this approach, including Boston, Washington, D.C., Denver, San Diego, and San Francisco. The details vary from case to case, but the idea is for private developers to incorporate some percentage of below-market-rate units into their new developments. These units can be rented or sold as long as they are targeted toward households with specific income brackets. But, Stein argues, inclusionary zoning is a flawed program. It's not just that it doesn't produce enough units, or that the apartments it creates aren't affordable, though both observations are undeniably true. The real problem with inclusionary zoning is that it marshals a multitude of rich people into places that are already experiencing gentrification. The result is a few new cheap apartments in neighborhoods that are suddenly and completely transformed. Advocates for the houseless have also challenged the value of inclusionary zoning, noting that it will do nothing for those in the shelters and the streets and cannot possibly solve New York City's housing crisis. But many leaders in the housing movement continue to support it. They argue that some new affordable housing is better than none, and that the program can be tweaked to produce better results. As I noted, however, even the reformist policies of inclusionary zoning that Stein discusses here, or of rent control, rent stabilization, and real estate transfer tax, are currently prohibited by Oregon law. Oregon House Bill 2564 would lift some of those preemptions, and you might want to contact your state representative about HB 2564, titled Relating to Affordable Housing. The truth is, Stein continues, cities know how to create affordable housing. The simplest, most direct, and cheapest way to do it is to build or acquire public housing, and actually maintain it well. Public housing not only provides affordable homes, but takes land off the speculative market, acting as a bulwark against gentrification. We also know that rent controls are the most effective strategy for keeping private housing prices down. The strength of rent regulation is its universality. Rather than applying to a small percentage of otherwise exorbitant housing, it can keep all rents in check. Stein advocates for democratically controlled community land trusts, which generally pairs a piece of land owned by a nonprofit with a building owned by a mutual housing association, which sells or rents the apartments at low costs and with limited outside management. If people can use these tools to take land off the market and develop permanently affordable alternatives, they can effectively decommodify their housing and reclaim community control. The solutions are out there, he notes, but the political will is not. Politicians and policymakers treat housing like a puzzle to be solved with the right balance of subsidies and profits. But affordable housing isn't a mystery, it's a contradiction. It can't be done in a way that benefits both capital and workers in equal measure. There are ways to do it poorly but profitably. There are ways to do it well, but they're not profitable. End quote. Of course, the politicians and policymakers Stein mentions are not the only agents involved. I turn now to some selections from a 1968 essay by Ian MacDonald in International Socialism on Housing, the Struggle for Tenants' Control, in which he describes a history of rent strikes in the early 20th century UK. Quote, in strike after strike, the tenants took complete control of the buildings in which they lived. At the end of the strike, the tenants often signed a clause with the landlord so that, if the landlord did not carry out the repairs properly, the tenants would take complete control of the management and would themselves collect the rents for this purpose. In at least one case in London's East End, this actually happened. The strike movement spread throughout the country and successfully pressured hostile governments to extend rent control and make other concessions to the tenants. The struggle between landlordism and tenants is a continuous one and will continue so long as the provision of housing is dominated by profits. End quote. In Portland, groups currently working to support and organize with tenants include the Portland Solidarity Network and Right to the City Portland. We need housing policies and tenant organizing that confront capitalism while providing a genuine social good. For the Old Mole Variety Hour, this has been Fran Michel.
I'm Joe Clement, your host for the Old Mole Variety Hour. We just heard Fran Michel bringing us the Well-Read Red. I'd like to add just one more group to the two that she mentioned. If you listened to Positively Revolting a few weeks ago, you would have heard Tori Abernathy and Nick Caleb describe three renters' assemblies that were to be held on the 24th, 25th, and 26th of February. And while I will provide a fuller report back in the weeks to come, I'd like to say that we did meet and had very inspired, engaging, and far-reaching discussions about our experiences as displaced and dismayed renters, and how we can connect to ideas and lines of action and groups like the Portland Solidarity Network and the Right to the City Coalition, among others, that are working to organize tenants to confront capitalism and demand housing as a public good. We have not settled on a name yet, though we are planning on meeting again in the first week of April at one of the Multnomah County Public Library's meeting rooms. We'll tell you more about it on the Old Mole in the weeks to come, or you can keep track of it by going to portlandrentersassembly.wordpress.com.